This is Points North on Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Peter Payette. Last week, the Michigan Land Use Institute gave a program about the local food movement in northwest lower Michigan. The sun is shining on the network of growers, processors, chefs, and other business owners involved in the rapidly growing food economy around here. But toward the end of the meeting, Don Coe stood up and warned of some dark clouds on the horizon. He says the recent outbreak of salmonella in the U.S. related to peanut butter will have consequences for everybody. He says the cost of the recall was too high for nothing to happen, and everyone with a stake in the food system ought to be about making it safer. Don is the managing partner of Black Star Farms in Suttons Bay, and he's a commissioner of agriculture in the state of Michigan, and I invited him on Points North this morning to tell us more. Also here with me in the studio is Nels Velliket. His family farms about 1,500 acres on the east side of Grand Traverse Bay as part of their farm business, Cherries R Us. So good morning to both of you.
Thanks, Peter.
Good morning, Peter.
Thanks for coming in. So, Don, why don't you give us an outline of what is wrong with the food safety system we have in this country?
I think the issue that we need to face is that the food safety system is scaled today to large producers. And if we're going to continue to have the trend that's rapidly developing of small producers selling directly to consumers, we're going to have to ensure that we have an affordable food safety program in place that serves the small producer and primarily serves the consumer.
How is it scaled to large producers?
Today, people who are subject to inspections, of course, are anyone who are moving products into both the supermarket trade, because the supermarkets themselves are requiring inspection services to protect their business, and people moving food into processing. Those are generally large producers that serve those channels of trade. The supermarkets are asking even small farmers now to have their operations inspected. The problem on inspections, and we have an inspection system in place, is that much of it is privatized and some of it is government. We have a USDA inspection service that doesn't certify or accept the inspections of the other six or seven privatized services. One thing that's uniform for all of them is that they are very expensive. A typical inspection from USDA is $92 an hour plus travel time and a minimum of 3.5 to 4 hours of inspection time at the operation itself. That's simply not affordable for the small farmer.
So aren't we getting a little ahead of ourselves if this system, if we're talking about it reaching out now to smaller and smaller farmers, if it's not even working for the companies that it is scaled to, shouldn't we be back there?
Well, I'm not sure that it isn't working for the companies that it's scaled to. We've had a system in place for gap inspections and certification for larger producers for a period of time. The fact that it's working for the supermarkets and it's working for those, and it'll be interesting, Mr. Velliket's comments, working for the larger producers probably is because they can afford those kinds of inspections and certification programs. It's a capacity issue for us in the Department of Michigan Department of Agriculture. The USDA program that we in the Department of Agriculture are under a memorandum of understanding are responsible for delivering inspection services is funded at a level in this state so that we have one USDA inspector and four MDA inspectors. Now let's take a reality in Michigan. The latest agricultural statistics that have just been produced indicate that we have 53,000 farms in Michigan, and approximately 12% of them at this time are selling direct. Now think about that. That's about 10,000 farms selling direct. If we believe for one moment that those 10,000 farms are certified, then we're kidding ourselves. We don't have the enough inspectors to provide inspection at any cost. Nor do we have an inspection service that's affordable for the great majority of those 10,000 farms that are selling direct.
And I would even submit the larger farms. The cost to a large farm like ours, where we have amongst the 1,500 acres here in northwest Michigan, 40-plus farms spread over two different counties, we're required for the inspector to visit every site during the harvest. I'm looking at 3 days versus 3 hours of time, you know, having an inspector on site if I can get one, because currently there are only 3 certified GAP inspectors for the state of Michigan.
So you really have to handle 40 small farms is sort of the upshot of
it. Essentially, yeah. So when I look at it, I see the future. Our co-op has asked us to be GAP certified by 2010. We will do it because our co-op is asking. The government will mandate it more than likely. I think it's forward-looking of the co-op to see that. But the reality is the value-added certification is what I'm most interested in as a producer, not the unfunded mandated certification from the government.
Let's sort through these a little bit. GAP is a certification that is being required of you by your buyer. That's the co-op in the future. What other certifications do you already have? Who else is certifying some aspect of your farm?
Here's some of the stuff that I've been asked in the past. Are we organic? No, we're not. But there is an organic certification that's available, and one of our processing facilities is certified organic to process organic cherries, Corbinix, out in Illinois County. The MEAT program, which is an environmental assurance program that's been active in Michigan for the last 10 years, is a voluntary program. You see those signs all over. They're very recognizable. They say this farm is environmentally verified. Don's farm is. Many farms on the old Michigan Peninsula are. And again, certifications like I've had people ask, are you kosher certified? Yes, we do kosher certification. These are things that my customers are asking me for that are adding value to my product. I've never had a customer ask me, are you GAP certified? But I've had people tell me that I need to get GAP certified. So again, I think the big distinction on the rules and the regulations is that they used to be a lot more definitive from the government end, but they've become increasingly subjective. And
So but you're saying the certifications you have now or could get are all consumer-driven.
Exactly. And that's really...
But now this GAP certification that your processor has asked you to have is now coming from the other direction, and potentially the federal government could require you to have this certification in the future.
More than likely. And to me, you know, I just want to know where is the value to the product in this certification. I'm willing to do whatever I need to do if it's going to add value to the product. If the consumer wants, there are so many different certifying organizations now. You've got lots of fair trade certifications popping up. You've got many different organizations that will offer a certification. What I think we're missing is that the consumer is more sophisticated than they used to be. They will look for the products that are certified in a way that makes them feel good about what they're buying. I don't honestly believe that the government stamp makes anybody feel any safer. When the Peanut Corporation of America has a permit that's expired hanging in their warehouse for 3 years, and the health department says, well, I just assumed that they were licensed, I think that speaks more to the problem that's inherent in the system than more regulations that are basically unfunded and mandated by the government.
What do you think, Don? Would a government required certification for these 10,000 farms that are selling direct and any other farm, is that part of the solution?
This is a system that has pressure at either end. Clearly, food safety is a federal issue because our market is a federal market. We move food into Michigan, we move food out of Michigan, we move food within Michigan, we move food into the country from out of the country. So. Every country, as part of its national security issues and health and safety issues, needs to regulate those the issues of food safety. So we're going to see some solutions or proposed solutions coming to us from the federal government. The peanut issue, the spinach issue that we had last year, the animal issue of downer animals, all point out that there are strains in the federal food inspection system, and Congress has indicated that they are planning to deal with it. There are proposals in front of Congress today to take away from the FDA and the USDA responsibility for food safety and put it into a new agency, maybe Health and Human Services. That scares me because taking down two programs and starting a new one is going to create even more confusion. And we grow our crops every year. We can't wait for these issues to be dealt with. But clearly, the federal government will come down with some new regulations. If that happens, it will fall upon the State Department of Agriculture, the state departments, in many cases, under memorandums of understanding, to provide on-the-ground services that are required by the federal government. Now, so we have those two actions that are occurring. Now, let's understand.
Let me back up. We already have that in the case of any sort of processing, any meat.
We do.
Dairy. So you produce cheese at Black Star Farm. So that is already the case in all of those industries. When we talk about proposed rules, new rules for farm certification, we're really talking about farms growing fruits and vegetables.
Yes, and our conversation today is about fruits and vegetables. But I'll point out that the fact that we already have these other systems in place for other food products is the template that I think we're going to be seeing for fruits and vegetables. Because there was a federal system put in place, people are going to say for other products, then let's now apply it to fruits and vegetables. Well, if we're going to apply it to fruits and vegetables, it's very important for us here in Michigan because of the diversity of crops and the number of fruit and vegetable crops we grow, and particularly for us along this west coast of Michigan where we have the fruit and vegetable belt. So we have the issue of more and more farmers selling directly to consumers through a farm market, a roadside stand, into schools, purchasing systems, and we don't have the resources in place to enforce any new federal standards that come down. So either the federal government's going to have to fund something, or the states are going to have to fund something. But the growers and the processors, and I think probably more likely the growers, are the least able people to fund inspection services when the inspection services are clearly not affordable for them. The inspection services in places, I repeat, are set up for large producers and are simply not affordable for small producers. And that's the threat to our food system, because at the end of the day, we're going to have two things, I think, that are going to be required by the federal government. One is, whether they're mandatory or voluntary, there's going to have to be good practice systems that people subscribe to. And MEEP is a very good, I'm glad you mentioned, Niels, the MEEP program. That's a voluntary program that gets ahead of the curve. Something like the MEEP program for fruits and vegetables. So we're going to have some kind of standard that people can sign on to and agree to. And then we're going to have traceability. At the end of the day, all of these food safety issues, when they come up, the only answer to them is to be able to trace that particular food item back to the farm where it was grown. And so we need some kind of a simple traceability program in place.
Well, let me ask, we're going to have Nels tell us a little bit about GAP, but if Michigan has a good farm certification program, MEEP, GAP, which is a federal program, why is this coming along?
Well, MEEP is actually parts of the various federal and state programs. The MEEP program is a Michigan environmental assurance program, and it really talks to environmental issues. It is not focused on food safety. So a program like MEEP, it's a voluntary program that allows a farmer in our operation to get ahead of the game. It takes about two years, though, and a number of federal and state inspections for us to voluntarily subscribe to best practice, and then we become certified as subscribing to best practice. But it's not an inexpensive process. It requires a federal and state employees, conservation district people to come onto your farm and spend time with you. So there's a lot of hours involved, plus a lot of hours in our time. And I would say that the MEEP program is not inexpensive. It's cost us thousands of dollars, as well as federal and state employees thousands of dollars.
And I think one of the things that Don mentioned as well is you can kind of get a sense that it's not a very convenient process either. Not only does it cost a lot of money, but none of this is going to be convenient for anybody. I mean, we already see the lack of inspectors for timely enforcement. For GAP, we're talking about if you're an apple harvest, 6 weeks, and fresh cherry harvest, perhaps 6 weeks. For these inspectors to get to you in Northwest Michigan while everyone else is in harvest, they have to be in your orchard at the time of inspection. You have to commit the time to them when they come to do the inspection. I cannot see in any way currently how they expect to make this a reality for the number of growers that need those services. They're not convenient, and they're extremely costly. So the main co-ops or the main processors are the ones that are going to have to do the legwork for the smaller producers. And Peterson Farms has done a great job with their apple growers and getting them ready and helping them with this process. Because, again, this is a GAP, which I like the name of the program because it uses the word good, but I hate the acronym. It implies that there's something missing. There's a gap somewhere. I mean, I think this is indicative of what we get out of Washington is this came out of a room somewhere. Nobody was thinking about the marketing potential. And I'm going to just harp on this because as a certification, I want to be able to say I'm environmentally verified. People like to hear that. I'm GAP certified. Sounds like I'm not doing something that I ought to be doing. So essentially, what GAP has tried to do is standardize the certification process for fresh fruit on a voluntary basis with the asterisk that unless you sell to the federal government, the USDA, if you make fresh sales to the USDA, you must be GAP certified. So I think this is why many people see GAP. The next logical extension is, well, then they made an exception for processed apples that are sliced and packaged. Okay, what's the next step? It's going to be pretty much any fruit or vegetable that's sliced or packaged or processed in any way.
Well, let me ask, what is the danger, what is the potential hazard that a fruit grower who's selling his or her fruit into, let's say, cherries into, you know, to a processor, presumably you're certifying the farm to avoid some risk or to manage some risk. What kinds of problems might occur on a farm that would cause somebody to get sick?
Well, GAP is mostly targeted at the handling of the product, and there are a few things that will get you a failure immediately. That is any animals or animal waste in the packaging or the transport of the product, which, of course, I think makes common sense to anyone. What isn't so common sense is that what also will get you a fail rate is if there is a bunny or a deer in your orchard doing their business while the auditor is there. That will get you a fail rate. And aside from the fact that then we go back to the convenience of having everyone who's on my farm for more than a half an hour be schooled in my hygienic program that I have developed in my handbook that's required through GAP, on big farms that are more production-based like ours, I guess I'm not going to say that that's easier for me to handle, but it's certainly easier for me to think about because mostly it's going to be suppliers or field men or people like that from industry that are coming to visit during the harvest season. For Don, he has people all over his farm all day long because that's where they want to be. And I think part of what GAP does not address is this interface that we've been trying to create, especially here in Northwest Michigan over the last 20 years, of making agriculture part of our culture again, getting people involved in it. And what GAP really does is it makes sure that I can't sip my soda while I'm standing under his apple tree.
Right, right. Well, let me ask you, Don, how on earth, I mean, it seems that for 1,500 acres you can develop these plans, make this happen, but I mean, if you just have a CSA and you're working on 10 acres, and you have 100 customers, and you also want them to come out and be a part of the production, how on earth are they going to meet all these standards and get inspectors? It just seems implausible.
That's exactly the point. My farm, that's complicated because we are also a winery, so we have 60,000 visitors coming to the winery, and they're wandering down to where the vegetables are being grown. GAP is not only a question of animals getting into the farm fields, but GAP also has pesticide residue testing. It has microbiological organism testing. Think about that for the small farm. It's literally impossible for the small farm to comply with GAP requirements as they are established for major food chain supply. Yet, the same diseases that are set up to be protected against for the major food chain, if we think now that more and more of us are going to be selling directly into schools and farm markets and other areas, we have to have something in place. So How do we bridge? I love Neil's term, the gap. We have to have something in place, and to put anything in place, we have to adequately fund it because of this scale. It's simply not affordable for the small farmer. Yet, if we have 10,000 people selling directly, we have more and more restaurants that are featuring local farm foods on their menus, perhaps from a single farm or perhaps from a group of farms under a single brand name. We have schools and hospitals that are being encouraged to purchase food directly from farmers. The reality is something has to be in place to provide for, and it isn't rocket science. Most of the safety protection methods we need to have in place are simply good food handling systems and perhaps some washing systems, that products before they leave be sorted and washed before they're accepted into a marketplace. And then some kind of a traceability, which can be done with a simple little sticker of some sort, a coated sticker, so that there is a problem, we can trace it back to the farm and where the problem exists. But
well, then why are cost. The programs so complicated? Nels is describing something that sounds, if it's a fairly simple proposition to produce safe, healthy food, why are these things so unwieldy? And
although I think the line that gets parroted at many of these sessions that are trying to educate us about these new regulations is that, don't worry, this is mostly stuff that you're doing already. So immediately the flag goes up in my head, well, if I'm already doing it already, if this is a standard that, you know, I'm covering somewhere else, why is it important for you to, again, re-regulate this standard? And in many ways, this is a moving target. It's hard to get answers on it because the people that are supposed to have the answers aren't really even sure what the final rulings is going to be yet.
And I would add, there are two other issues. One is, what is acceptable risk? Perhaps we need to decide what is acceptable risk for salmonella. My grandmother said, and many of us remember our grandparents saying, you eat a peck of dirt before you die. We live in a society today that wants to eliminate all dirt before you die. And so what do we have? We have a population that no longer has natural immunities. You know, many of us grew up with immunities because perhaps we'd eaten food that had contamination, and we developed a natural immunity to that contamination. It's probably a reason why many of us ate our own farm food for years and years and lived good, long, healthy lives. So we have those realities around us that I believe our immune systems aren't as active as they were. And I believe that, well, in fact, more food is going to start to move directly to the consumer table from the farm. And that absolutely replicates the system we had 40 years ago.
And that will happen with or without these regulations. People will seek out, and I've seen it happen, people will seek from the local producers because they trust them, because they can physically go to the spot where the produce is growing, and they can meet the person who's giving it to them. That is much more important to them than any stamp or any certification. That is why the local food movement, I think, really has cultural legs to it, because it's the interface. Again, we know the people that we're getting the food from. People are, again, much less likely to believe that I, as an independent producer, am going to do something that's going to jeopardize their health than a giant bureaucratic system that cannot handle the current regulations that it already has. I am much more trustworthy, and I say that as, I think, a fairly trustworthy guy.
But, Don, you said something that I've almost never heard anyone say, that we may not want to be overly confident in the safety of what our neighboring farm is doing.
Well, that's exactly the case. And years ago, you know, the reason why we have USDA inspections and handling of meat, you know, meat and even poultry and other issues, is because there are practices that were clearly unhealthy at the local level, and so we had to put a system in place. We trust the local farmers if we go to the local farmers and if we walk their fields. But there are other people, and this surprised me myself at the small farm conference we just had in Grayling, where we were having a presentation about local food systems, the presenter said, I used to buy local food until from a roadside stand of my neighbor until one day the neighbor wasn't there in the roadside stand, and I walked out behind the barns and I saw what was happening in the fields, and I've never purchased food from that farm before. You see what can happen? One, because we report and we're concerned about food safety, we now have this emerging trend of many more people selling directly. But one problem can bring down the entire system. And that's my concern, is that we have to have in place an acceptable level of compliance with good food handling systems at we have to back it up with some kind of an inspection service. It doesn't have to be as rigid as foods going into the major food channels. But look at the supermarkets for a minute. I sit in and monitor the fruit and vegetable workshop for the Department of Agriculture, which brings together the purchasing managers of the major supermarkets and Myers and Spartan stores, and sitting in a room with those buyers who would love to have more local food, and in fact are buying some local food now. They are, quite frankly, at wit's end. They are saying that they have to protect their shareholders and their companies and their own liability insurers, and they are saying, give us a system that we can rely upon and that will work and will protect us against claim. Because some of their buyers are mandating different inspection systems for different products. So there may be one inspection system for plums and another for potatoes and another for cherries. And back at the farm, if a farmer can't afford $92 an hour for the USDA inspector, think if they have to pay another $92 to have another inspector come in, or $1,500 at some third-party inspection service. And so the people who are buying, and think about the medical. Well, you know, we can move a lot of local, safe, local, fresh and healthy food into medical facilities. But the hospital is going to have that dietitian is going to have a very clear concern about the safety or introducing anything to the hospital. Then we have the other issue, is that we are moving a lot of food around this world today. And we have food coming into this country, and we have trucks crossing our borders, and without adequate inspection services in place, we are introducing new diseases into this country all the time. We don't know what the next issue will be coming down the road. So we need a net. We need a safety net in place. The safety net has to serve everyone, and the safety net has to recognize the growth of the local food movement and much smaller suppliers. And it has to ensure that we, and it always starts with dollars, that we fund a system that will work and will provide basic food safety.
All right, that's Don Coe. He is the managing partner of Black Star Farms in Sutton's Bay. Also here with me is Nels Avelicet. His family farms about 1,500 acres on the east side of Grand Traverse Bay. And their farm company is Cherries R Us. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back. This is Points North on Interlochen Public Radio. Points North on Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Peter Payette, and my guests right now are Don Coe. He's the managing partner of Black Star Farms in Sutton's Bay, and a commissioner of agriculture in the state of Michigan. Nels Avelicet, is part of a family farm operation that has orchards on about 1,500 acres on the east side of Grand Traverse Bay. We're talking about food safety. What does it take to have a safe food supply in the U.S. today, and in what ways do we need to be careful that it doesn't crush the emerging local food movement in places like Northwest Lower Michigan? We're joined right now by Patty Lavera with Food and Water Watch in Washington, D.C. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
As listeners have probably noticed, there's a fair bit of discussion online and nationally about bills that have been drafted and introduced in the Congress to address the shortcomings of our current system. Tell us about some of the legislation that has been put forward and what's happening with it.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't think it's any surprise to anybody that there's multiple food safety bills. I mean, given what's been in the news for the last couple of years, and even this year with this Peanut Corporation of America recall, kind of, I think, was a tipping point for a lot of members. And I think we're tracking 6 bills at this point, and there's probably going to be a couple more. The one that seems to really be getting a lot of attention on the Internet and on discussion boards and things like that is one introduced by Representative DeLauro from Connecticut. And she is really tackling FDA issues, and so it's important to know that when you talk about meat and poultry inspection, that's done by USDA, and not many of these bills are really touching that. The bills are really focusing on FDA, the agency that regulates everything else, fruits, vegetables, processed foods, fish. And so, for example, Rosa DeLauro's bill would split the FDA into two. It would make a food agency and a drug agency. There's a bill from Representative Dingell from Michigan that would leave FDA in the same structure but sets up new rules for them in terms of how often they inspect processing plants and a lot of other items like that. And then there's several other bills that do varying degrees of the same thing and really talking about FDA's purpose and what their authority is and what they can do. I mean, the discussion about how these bills impact small farms is very, very important, and you know, we're glad that it's happening, and it's overdue because some of the food safety problems we're dealing with are because we haven't fixed these regulations in a long time. And so we think it's an important discussion, and we just want to make sure that people are talking about all of the bills because there's actually pieces in Representative Dingell's bill, which looks like it's going to move first and is going to be the vehicle where the action kind of happens. This is the way it goes down in D.C. We have a lot of bills, and everyone kind of picks theirs, and then one kind of comes out as the contender, and you try to modify that and change that as it moves through the committees and moves through the process, and it looks like that's going to happen with Dingell's bill.
Why is his bill apparently more viable, and what would it do?
Well, there's a lot of theories about why it's more viable. Some of it happens to be that it's from Representative Dingell, and he's been there for a long time. He's very influential in the committee that's going to make a lot of these decisions, the Energy and Commerce Committee, and he's taking an approach where he's not going to change the way that FDA is structured or where they're housed or what name they have, but he just dives in a little bit to what their duties are. So, for example, the DeLauro bill was a bit more aggressive in breaking up FDA and really kind of starting a new setup for them. And so there's a lot of this is all kind of a parlor game in D.C., seeing who says what and when and how it all moves. And, we think DeLauro's bill probably would have upset a lot more of the big food processing industry, actually, than some of the other bills. And so that always makes it a challenge for bills like that to move. So Dingell's bill specifies that, food processing plants have to be inspected with some frequency depending on what they do. But I wanted to bring up a couple points about it for this small farm discussion. One of the things it does talk about is what are safe handling practices for growing produce. And so I think that's an issue that folks who are raising produce and people that are into local foods and direct marketing should really be thinking about. And he does say that there should be some public discussion about what those standards are, but that's going to be a really important piece of any bill, is making sure that those are standards that small farms can live with and can exist with, that are compatible with organic, are compatible with wildlife protection you're doing or water protection you're doing on your farm already. And then the other really important piece of all this is the concept of traceability. And I think I just heard one of the earlier speakers talk about that. The Dingell bill has a piece that says record keeping is needs to be done electronically, and I know that that is a huge issue for a lot of small farms, and so I think that's something that this discussion should include as well, is what kind of traceability system do we need, what kind do we want, and what works for small farmers, and a lot of them say not electronic, so that's part of the discussion we need to be having.
Who can let us in on what's the problem with electronic traceability for a small farm?
Well, people would say that a lot of small farmers might not have computers so that they could enter the information into databases. We have such high ownership of computers now that I would really question whether that's that much of a problem. We have extension offices, for an example, in every one of our counties in Michigan. A farmer, we could very easily establish an extension office, a computer database, and the farmer could simply call in or send in just a simple report every week of what they had sold direct. So I we can overcome these problems.
I think some farmers object to the notion of government tracking and compiling in databases information about every head of lettuce that is grown or tomato. What do you think of those concerns?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, though, the farmer is not opposed to a safe system or traceability system. I'm going to use the tired phrase again. This is a lot of stuff that we're already doing. You know, within our own tracking systems, you know, we can basically track back to the row where the fruit came from in any particular bin. So, and we do that as a general practice of business. So this isn't something that's foreign to us. I think a lot of times the argument that gets brought up, well, we don't want the government in our business, is a similar argument to, well, farmers don't know what computers is. You know, we're all still out there back with the plow behind the horse, and I think it's a very bucolic view of things, but it's not the reality of modern business. And farming is a modern business, just like everything else. And I think once the general public starts to accept that, you realize that we are in the business of farming, not only because it's a good life, but also because we can make a living at it.
Patty, do the bills that Congress drafts, do they speak to mandating these, you know, handling practices or ways to deal with traceability, or do they authorize departments to create mandates?
That's a really important point, and I mean, they vary from bill to bill, and so some of them go farther. But all of them have a role for some agency to go write the fine print, you know, and the devil is always in the details. We've seen that on, you know, many programs before. But the one example is there's several bills that just talk about traceability, and one of them is very, very clear about there will be a mandatory system for, you know, tracing this, this, and this. A different bill says, okay, we should have traceability and we should set up some committees to figure out how to do it. You know, the agency should have a long process to figure out what's the best way. So they differ in their approach of how, you know, how prescriptive they want to be. You know, and even in these ones that deal with the FDA foods, the fruits and vegetables and things like that, some of them say you will use something called good agricultural practices, which is a term we're already using kind of on a voluntary basis. A lot of agencies talk about good agricultural practices, and other ones just say the agency needs to come up with something. So they vary in that, but whatever passes in whatever form, there will be a whole other process where, you know, the FDA or, you know, whatever agency has to write these rules, and that's something that we need, you know, all levels of agriculture to participate in, not just the biggest, which is sometimes what happens.
Is there any sympathy in Washington, D.C. for the idea that if someone buys food from a grower or producer directly, face-to-face, off the farm or at a farmer's market, that the liability, any liability, would be on the shoulders of those two who were involved in the transaction, and that government could just let that whole kind of growing area of food commerce govern itself and not be regulated?
I think that level of understanding may exist with some individuals in the government, but I don't think it's sunk in enough to be any part of the conventional wisdom. And I think it's still new enough, as popular as it is, and we all know it's growing, you know, astronomically, and it's the hottest thing in food right now is getting to know where it comes from and having that relationship with who's selling it to you. But we still haven't, you know, we're still not into double digits yet in terms of percentage of the food supply. So I think, you know, a lot of regulators are dealing with kind of what's in front of them, which is the mainstream bulk of the food supply, which is still happening kind of through these industrialized channels. So I think we have a lot of work to do still to communicate that in D.C. I mean, I was just in a meeting yesterday, for example, where we were talking, you know, to some legislative staffers about, you know, a lot of these standards talk about risk. And you know, what the rules are should depend on how risky the product is. And that's an okay concept. And we were just really pushing them to try to think through that risk isn't just, you know, it's spinach versus kale versus iceberg lettuce, but also how far did it travel? You know, how many steps did it take between being picked and being eaten? What kind of, you know, interaction was there? And, you know, in people just being able to trace it themselves, let alone some fancy, you know, traceability system. And just that's a part of risk, too, is how it's distributed, how it's sold, how it's processed, that it's not just black and white, this product is risky and this product isn't, you know, that this chain, this supply chain matters as well. And I think we have work to do to keep communicating that.
Let me tell our listeners that our phone system is actually working, and you could join in our conversation at 276-4500 or 800-442-9422. That's Patty Lavera with Food and Water Watch in Washington, D.C. Also here with me is Don Coe, managing partner of Black Star Farms in Suttons Bay and a commissioner of agriculture for the state of Michigan, and Nels Veliket, who's part of a farm operation that includes about 1,500 acres of orchards on the east side of Grand Traverse Bay. Cherries are us. And again, 276-4500 or 800-442-9422. Don, what do you think about that idea of letting the consumer, when consumers deal directly with farmers, then, you know, the risks go with them and the government doesn't have to try and make sure nothing bad happens?
I can't imagine a government, certainly the government I know, not wanting to get involved in an issue of food safety. We've linked food safety in some people's minds with national security. We're in a different mindset in this country after 9/11 about national security. So I think, you know, it's like death and taxes. Government is inevitable, and government will want to have their hands in on this issue. And quite frankly, take the state of Michigan alone. We export $1 billion of our agricultural products, and the farm community is saying, and the larger farm community that is, of course, that's in the export business, is saying, we cannot export unless we have standards in place at the place of production or at the point where a product is grown, unless we have some certification system in place. So we bump up against the reality is that we have a system in place. It's strained and it has failed us in a number of cases, and people at the at the larger end, the commercial, the larger, more commercial farms, or the production farms, as some people want to call them, absolutely need a system and are asking for an effective system in place. And then we have at the other end, we have this growing group of local suppliers selling direct, and I can't imagine government not getting involved. And as I've indicated to you before, the risk. The risk is there. There's no question but that the risk is there. In the Department of Agriculture here in Michigan, just on that peanut recall, we've spent today probably $600,000 that was not funded in providing recall services, supporting recall services for over 3,400 products. Now, these are processed products, but over 3,400 products so far. And it'll probably cost us close to $1 million before we finished dealing with this issue. And that's just one issue of a processed product. But there are products that we had. Spinach was a fresh product coming out of the field. So let's recognize we have the issue. Recognize that federal government is going to act, just the number of bills. And let's try to structure a system in place that's workable and affordable and supports what is happening with the in the small farm community and among the consumers, so that it's either taxes or it's some kind of a system in place. I personally believe, and we believe in the Department of Agriculture, and not punishment-based inspection systems, but reward-based inspection systems. Let's put a system in place of inspections and fund it, and then reward people for good practice, complying with good practice. That would change the whole dialogue immediately.
Let me just back up, though, on something you said. You said, you know, modern government is not going to consider any of this out of its domain. But I thought I heard you say that there is a state, Virginia or West Virginia, that at least considered or did say in direct consumer-to-customer farm-to-consumer sales, then that is an unregulated matter.
I'm going to No, I did not say so.
You did not? Okay.
I'd be interested, though, in hearing.
Okay.
Well, and I think, you know, I would have to agree with Don. I think, you know, pertinent regulation that adds value is reasonable. When you have an interface at a farmer's market or along the county road, the government is involved at that point. You're using, whether it's a government right-of-way along the highway or not, I think that's where I look at it. If I'm just going over to my neighbor's house to get a dozen eggs from him or barter a cherry pie, that's unregulated by the government, you know, individual transactions like that. But when we talk about any kind of commercial transaction where the government is going to be involved, we have to have something that's reasonable, that adds value, and is affordable. The risk that we have today is that Don brought up a good point. We're in a nascent stage where people are really getting into the local food movement if they find out in some way or they experience themselves an illness because of poor food handling practices. It can really affect the whole rest of this emerging industry. So it's important to have that regulation, but it's got to be convenient. It's got to be funded somewhere. This is a issue for large producers as well as small producers. It's easy to throw regulations at me and responsibility at me if I'm the one that has to pay for it, because in the end, if I don't pay for it, I'm pretty much cut off from particular channels and I lose business. It's a completely different incentive than having a certification that my customer has asked me for, that my customer has pushed me for, that says this is gonna sell more product because people want to know that it's environmentally verified. Incentives are the way to get compliance.
Okay, we have some callers. I don't know who they are, so we're just going to take a chance here. Good morning. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, who's this?
Hey, this is Rob Sarine, MSU Extension. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you, Rob?
Good. Yeah, just a couple of things. I was just going to mention the point that Nels just brought up right there, that it always seems to be it falls on the farmer to pay for these sort of changes that the people or the processors are demanding. And they're doing their best to stay in business and barely scraping by in this day and age. So that was the first point. The second one was, I had a question, and I don't know if Don or someone can answer this, is on the international stage, are there going to be USDA inspectors going to other countries and auditing folks in other countries for the produce that's imported? And if not, then that doesn't seem like a level playing field to me.
Okay. Well, thanks for the question, Rob.
Thanks, Rob. And you touched on a real issue, and that's what I call the level playing field issue. Large grocery chains that are sourcing food overseas are going to absolutely require some kind of an inspection service. More likely, they'll go to one of the privatized inspection services and ask the private sector to provide that service, and that cost will be passed on. Guess where? It'll be passed on to the consumer at the point of sale by the supermarket. But the supermarket or the large food group will simply have to do this. And in many cases, we have inspections that are being standardized across governments, whether it's the European Union or in the United States for international trade. What we have to have then is a level playing field for all operators to be able to compete. If one group has to pay a cost, if it can't pass it on, that's one thing. But if there's a significant group of growers that escape those costs, that causes a problem for the other people who are complying and are paying for inspection services.
And let me ask, Patty Lavera, do any of this legislation that's been introduced lately, does it envision some sort of, you know, international food safety system?
That's an excellent point, and it's one of the things that distinguishes these bills from each other. Some start to get there, and some don't, in our opinion. And so I think that's something people should be communicating to their members of Congress. For example, There is a bill by Senator Durbin from Illinois, and it's very reliant on third parties to do a lot of this, whether it's domestic or imported, and that concerns us because we're living with that now, and we see the import inspection just not working. FDA basically has the resources right now to look at 1% of imported food at the border, and they don't have very many resources to go to these countries, and they don't have any authority to do anything when they're there. So that's a real, real, real weak point in our food safety net right now, and some of the bills don't go far enough to do that. For example, that bill by Representative DeLauro from Connecticut said that imported foods would have to meet the same standards as domestically produced foods, and that's a really important distinction that a lot of the other bills don't have.
Let's try and fit in one more caller. Good morning, you're on Points North. Looks like you're gone. One more try. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on. Tell us who you are and what's your question or comment. We just have a couple minutes.
Has been Slider calling from a very, very small farm in Manistee County, and I'm happy that all of the people on the program today are recognizing that the risks are different at different scales, and of course the solutions to ameliorate those risks are different at different scales. The question I have is there a place here for the we very small growers with local markets to develop our own standards, voluntary standards, and kind of work those up through the system, bottom up, and to try to develop something that can then be implemented or recognized, that recognizes our scale and our needs and the risks that are...
Yeah, well, Jim, let me just say, if your radio sound, turn it off. I'm being told, although I don't hear any loopback. But we just have a minute left. Maybe you could just tell us what you sense about this that would suggest farms at your size are not, you know, this won't come down to a scale that's right for you.
Well, I guess the issue really is whether things come down as a one-size-fits-all, and that's the problem that we would see if that's the way the regulations come down. They would be difficult, as has been pointed out already several times, at this scale.
Okay, so that's just your expectation.
Well, that's a good question. I think it's inevitable that we're going to see some issues. Some regulations coming in our direction. The question is whether we can comply.
All right, we are going to have to leave it there. Jim, thanks for the call. Thanks also to my guest, Patty Lavera with Food and Water Watch in Washington, D.C., Don Coe, managing partner of Black Star Farms in Suttons Bay and a commissioner of agriculture in the state of Michigan, and Nels Velikat with the family business Cherries R Us. Thanks to Tom Kramer and Linda Steffen for helping me produce the show this morning. Jack Connors is our engineer. John Wunsch provided our theme. I'm Peter Payette. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend.